last week we saw how the techacha that Shmuel gives the Jewish people for wanting a king, and he brought rain during the time of the harvest, which is a siman kalola. Now this week what we're going to see is how the beginning of the kingdom of Shmuel starts off, and it starts off in a very challenging way with a war with the Plishtim. So Pasuk Yud Gimel, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Aleph opens up. Ben Shana Shol B'Malchai U'Shtei Shani Malachal Yisrael. Now literally what it means is that Shol was a year old when he was a king, but obviously that's impossible. He couldn't have been a year old when he was king. So Chazal explain that just like a year old Leit Tam Tam Chet, a year old did not taste, did not do any averis, so too Shmuel did not do any averis, just like a baby that's a year old. Another parish. What?
You said Shmuel. Right?
Sorry, Shol. Shol, yeah.
You know right. What he means.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, it's very easy to get confused. Yeah. Shol, Shmuel. Another parish in Chazal says that a melech, shemalach, a person who became a king, All his averis are forgiven, and he starts off fresh. He was a king now for 2 years. Now the way it worked was the first year, the king would just establish his kingdom. He would not engage in war with anyone. He would just try to get to know the people, get to know the system, and the best way of ruling. So the way he set it up was there were 3,000 men that he chose to be soldiers at all times. 1,000 men he sent with his son in Givas Binyamin. And 2,000 men were in one in his two homes. One was in Har Beisel, and one was in Michmash. Shaul had two homes, two castles, and he kept 1,000 soldiers in each castle. That's the way he set it up. Vayach Yehoinasan es nitziv plishtim asher begeva, veishmu plishtim, v'shaul toka b'shoifer b'chol aretz leimar yishmu ha'ivrim. Now, politically, the situation was that the Plishtim were now ruling over the Jewish people, because even though during the time of Shmuel the Plishtim were not ruling over the Jewish people in the beginning, but later when Shmuel got older, later the Jewish people sinned, they did the wrong thing, and then the Plishtim started ruling over the Jewish people again. And this is the time where they were still ruling over the Jewish people. They had a government official in each city to make sure that things would be in order and they would not rebel against the Plishtim. So Yehoinasan, the son of Shaul, went on his own accord. He was not told to do this, but he wanted to rebel against the Plishtim. He wanted to, so to speak, show who's the master over here. And he went ahead and killed the government official of the Plishtim. Now what Shaul had to do was he had to recall all the Jewish people, because remember, he just selected 3,000 men to be his personal soldiers, and he sent the rest of the Jewish people to their homes, and now he had to recall all of them back to join him in war, because now the Plishtim were going to attack, since Yehoinasan killed the government official in Givas Binyamin. Pasuk Daled continues. Everyone heard exactly what happened, that Shaul killed the government official. Right, but the Malbim explains that the Mice of Yehoinasan is Misyaches, it relates back to his father. And because his father was the king, so even though Yehoinasan was the one who killed the government official of the Plishtim, it's related back to his father, back to Shaul. Therefore, they all gathered again to the Gilgal. Now, we remember in Perek Ches how Shmuel told Saul that at some point in your kingdom, you're going to come to the Gilgal. And what I want you to do is I want you to wait 7 days until I come there. Do not do anything. Do not sacrifice the oilos. Do not sacrifice the korbanos. Do not engage in war. I want you to wait for me until I get there, and only then can you sacrifice the korbanos and engage in war. Now we'll see that Shmuel didn't exactly listen to what Shmuel Shaul did not listen to what Shmuel told him, and we'll see exactly why. Pasuk Hay continues: Plishtim nesfal leilachim yisrael shloshim elef rechem v'sheish eselavim barashim ve'am kichol asher asfas hayam laroiv v'yal v'yachan b'michmas kidmas beis alvin. The Plishtim now gathered for war. Their camp counted 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and footmen like the sand on the seashore. So the army of the Plishtim was an enormous army which was opposing the Jewish people. Jewish people, remember, only had 3,000 soldiers at this point. Not very much. Vishisrael Rogi Sarloi. The Jewish people realized that, and this is a time of desperation, Kinigash Om, Vishabuam Bemoros, Bechavavim, Uxloim, Betsrichim, Uboveris. The Jewish people realized what grave danger they're in, and they went ahead and hid in the nooks, in the little caves that were all spread out in the mountains, because they were terrified. They didn't want the Plishtim to kill them.
Did they have, like, were they, like, terribly outnumbered? Like, it seemed like, so the Plishtim had, what, 30,000?
Yeah, they were vastly outnumbered.
Shaul sent them all home, so he didn't have an army anymore?
Right, like, he selected 3,000 soldiers.
So 3,000 against 30,000?
30,000 chariots.
Then
there were 6,000 horsemen. And right. Footmen were
okay, 30,000 chariots.
Yeah. What's an army?
So they were well outnumbered.
Yeah. So why were all the Jewish people say all were like it scattered back where they were living?
Yeah, Shaul did not plan to engage in war, definitely not in the first year. The first year traditionally was reserved to sit at home, to solidify his kingdom.
Okay.
And his rulership. But Yehoshaphat went on his own accord and attacked the Plishtim by killing their government official.
Okay.
And so Shaul did not think that he would need more than 3,000 men. He just needed like a minimal amount of soldiers to guard his palace, but nothing major. Mm-hmm. That's why he sent everybody else home. Right. What he had to do right now is gather them back together again and rebuild the army.
Okay.
The problem was that once the Jewish people realized how vast the Plishtim army was, they were terrified. They didn't want to face such a scary army.
So why did they attack? Who?
Yehoshaphat.
Was it his decision?
It was his idea to attack the government official of the Plishtim and to kill him.
Okay.
He did it on his own accord. Shaul did not tell him to do this.
We don't know why he did it.
He wanted to rebel for whatever reason. He wanted to either show them who's boss. Maybe he thought that they would be able to defeat them now that the Jewish people have a king. But it doesn't seem like it was such a wise move. Definitely not in the first year. The Ivrim over Sayardin Eretz Gad v'Gilad v'Shol Oydan v'Gilgal v'Chol Am Chardu Acharav. Some of them passed over the Jordan River, which is back to the Nachla of Gad and Reuven, Chatzi Shevet Menashe. That's where they were staying. It wasn't technically part of part of Eretz Israel. And Shaul remained in the Gilgal with the rest of the Jewish people, and they were all scared and terrified. And they were putting a lot of pressure on him to engage in war already now. They didn't see the sense in waiting 7 days for Shmuel to come and sacrifice the korbanos. They thought that they have to begin in war right now, right away. What are you waiting for? The Plishtim are all set up. Their camp is assembled. There is no reason to wait. They were putting a lot of pressure on Shaul to begin the war immediately. But Saul remembered what Shmuel told him, not to engage in war, not to do anything until he gets there. Pasuk Ches continues, V'yechel shivas yamin l'mayda sh'shmuel, v'leiva Shmuel agilgal, v'yafay tza'am me'olav. So Shmuel is now waiting 7 days. He's waiting impatiently. The Jewish people are putting a lot of pressure on him. He sees the enormous army of the Plishtim all ready and set to engage in war. And he figured that when Shmuel said 7 days, that what he meant was on the seventh day, meaning on the beginning of the seventh day, he held that part of the day is like the whole day, Miktas Hayim Kekulai. And therefore, at the beginning of the seventh day, he held Shmuel was already supposed to be there. And the Jewish people already started scattering out. They were all running away because they were afraid. And Shmuel decides to take action. He calls the Jewish people and tells them, bring me the oil, bring me the carbon. I will now bring the carbon. Even though there was no Isra to be makar of the carbon, because in those days, you were allowed to be makar of a carbon in the Bama, in a random Mizbeach outside of the Mishkan. However, what he did wrong was that he did not wait for Shmuel, because Shmuel told him specifically, do not bring the carbonis. Wait until I get there. But Shmuel, since he was desperate, he wanted to take some kind of action. He didn't know what to do, so he didn't engage in war, but he wanted to at least begin the process of bringing the carbonis.
Yeah. You never listened to Shmuel.
Sorry?
You never listened to Shmuel.
No, you didn't listen to Shmuel.
Well, he was giving these very hard tests. I mean, he
right.
Put under
I'm saying
tremendous
it was.
Pressure.
Listen, the man was under tremendous pressure
by the people,
by the situation, by the time.
But if it's a sakana, you're allowed to do certain things, no?
Yeah, but Shmuel told him explicitly, wait for me 7 days, do not do anything.
Well, they waited. Did they wait 7 days?
But they waited 7 days, but in the beginning of the seventh day, what?
He did it 1 hour too early?
Well, he understood. His calculation was that Mikta Sayim Kekulei, part of the day is like the whole day. And therefore, already on the beginning of the seventh day, Shmuel should have been there, according to his calculation. And when Shmuel didn't show up, he figured, okay, maybe something went wrong. Shmuel was held back. He couldn't make it for whatever reason. Therefore, I have to go ahead and take action. I can't hold back anymore, any longer. That's why he went ahead and brought the Karbanis. As he's finishing to bring the carbon, Shmuel approached right then and there. Shmuel comes out to approach him and to give him a bracha. Shmuel turns to him and says, what did you do? What have you done? I realize that the Jewish people are leaving me. Everyone is scattered and they went to their own house, to their own place. You did not come in time. Again, his calculation was that he should have come in the beginning of the day. But Plishtim nesafim michmash. Plishtim are now gathered in michmash, which is, remember, michmash is one of the houses, one of the places where Shaul lived. Now that's where one of his his palaces were. Vaymar, ata yerdu Plishtim elah Gilgal. Now the Plishtim will now come down to the Gilgal, Pnei Hashem lechnisi v'esapak va'ale ha'ilo. Meaning, I held back, and I went against my better judgment, and I brought the ha'ilo. But what I held back from was, I held back from engaging in war. I did not do that. I even though I wanted to begin the war, but I held back, and I only brought the oil. I only started bringing the korbanis. I did not engage in war yet. Again, he figured also that what he was commanded to do was to wait before he would begin the war. He didn't know that Shmuel told him to. He didn't understand what Shmuel was telling him, that he should not even bring the korbanis. Shmuel now turns to Shaul and says, "Niskalta." That was a foolish move. Shmuel is telling him, because of your foolish move, Hashem will now take away the kingdom from you. You're really supposed to live, You're supposed to rule, be the king forever. You and your descendants, everyone, the Malucha, the kingdom was supposed to be passed from father to son, generation to generation. But because you did not listen to me, and you started to bring the Korbanos, you will now pay for what you have done, and Hashem will rip away the kingdom from you. Now the Bible points out that this is not exactly the way it was supposed to be. Because Yaakov promised the Malucha, he promised the kingdom to Shevet Yehuda, and Shaul comes from Shevet Binyamin. So what does it mean that you're that Shmuel was telling Shaul you're supposed to be king forever? It's not true. The Melech, the king, is supposed to come from Shevet Yehuda, not from Shevet Binyamin. So the Malbim says is that what he means is it's not Shaul is not going to be king forever. It doesn't literally mean forever. Rather, it means for a very long time. That's what he means by Ad Olam, forever. Just means a long time, that's all. For a long time, you're supposed to be the king, but because you did not listen to the word of Hashem, you did not listen to me, and you started bringing the Korbanos, I will rip away the Malacha early, and you will be the last king in your line. Your son will not be king anymore.
So we, you know, usually, like, a lot of times we think that it was what Shaul did with Amalekites, that he let the king of Amalekites live. Usually we think of that as sort of like, what's that? Because that's sort of the, Shmuel tells him that he's going to not be king. But really, right. It's already here.
It's not clear from the Mefarshim if Hashem was just taking away his kingdom early, or he didn't decide yet that he will be the last king.
Here
at this point. Meaning it could have been that it could even like would pass through a few generations, but it would be shorter than what it was going to be. It was going to be for a very long time, but because he did not listen to Shmuel, Hashem will take away the kingdom earlier than what it was scheduled for.
And then when he failed with Agag, then what happened?
Then that was it. He said, Hashem said, you're not going to be able to be king anymore. Mm-hmm. Meaning that cut even his own kingdom short. Because right. At that point, Shaul couldn't be king anymore. David was Nimshach by Shmuel after that.
But that was what's so strange, is like Shaul was king for actually a really long time. When David was already Nimshach, like nobody recognized David as king. And he,
right.
Shmuel was still the official king for many, many years, until finally with that last battle with, was it with the Plishtim?
Where Shaul ended up killing himself.
I thought he lost his kingdom because he didn't kill out the king of Amalek.
Right. Right. But what are we...
He's giving him a nevuah here now.
He's giving a nevuah that the kingdom was going to be taken away from his descendants earlier than what was scheduled. I mean, it could have been that it would continue for a few generations, but not for a long time, just for a few generations.
Doesn't it say later when he came back with all the behemoths and everything,
right.
and he says, you didn't do what God wanted to,
right?
You're not going to be king anymore. It seems he's telling him here already he's not going to be king anymore.
So he's not telling him you're not going to be king anymore. He's just saying the way it was supposed to be was that you and your descendants were going to be king for a very, very, very long time. All he's doing over here is cutting it short, cutting the kingdom of all his descendants short. So instead of lasting, let's say, 10 generations, it's only going to last 5 generations.
And he's not telling him when.
And, right, he's not telling him when. And then when it came to Amalek, he said, okay, that's it. I'm cutting off the kingdom from you. You're not going to be king anymore. Your son is definitely not going to be king, and that would be the end of it. And we're going to see he's going to appoint David to be king.
He didn't learn his lesson from here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Pasuk Yedad continues. Ba'atam amlachta chalai tokum bikesh Hashem loy ish kelvavai v'tzevei Hashem lo nagid al amai kelo shamarta es asher tzivcha Hashem. meaning you thought that the way to rule is naturally, right? I'm going to rule, I'm going to win the war with my military strategy, with through the natural course of events. But it's not true. The Jewish king cannot win without Hashem. It does not work with your strategy and your military experience. It works with the will of Hashem. And if Hashem decides you're going to win the war, you're going to win the war. It doesn't work according to what you think, the natural way of event, the way you think it's supposed to work. And that was his mistake. That's why, since you didn't wait for Shmuel, you didn't wait for Hashem, you're going to be punished. The kingdom will be ripped away from your descendants. Ve'yakom Shmuel ve'yal min ha'Gilgal givas Binyamin. Shmuel went up to... He left the Gilgal, he went over to Givat Binyamin. Now he's counting the remaining soldiers. Remember, they're all leaving Shmuel. They're all leaving Shaul, sorry. They were leaving Shaul during those 7 days. They're all terrified and scared. They figured they're definitely going to lose the war because they were well outnumbered. And from all the soldiers that remained, there were only 600 soldiers left. So from starting from 3,000, which was already very little, we come down to 600, facing this huge, vast army that the Plishtim have. Shaul and his son, and the remaining people that are with them, are sitting in Geva Binyamin, which is, again, where Yohanan's son killed the government official of the Plishtim. And the Plishtim are camping out in Michmash, which is in one of the houses of Shaul. V'yetzei ha-mashchis mimachna Plishtim shlei sharoshim v'reish echad yifne el derech ofra el eretz shul. Now, the camp of the Plishtim, they divided their camp into three groups, three major groups, and everyone was going to attack from a different side. Now, the situation of the Jewish people was so desperate that they did not even have any weapons with which to fight, as we're going to see. Faresh echad yifn derech beis chayron, faresh echad yifn derech hakvul, anishkaf al getz, atzvayim hamidbara. One of the groups is attacking from beis chayron, the other group is attacking from the border on the gates vayim, and the third group is attacking from the desert. The third group is attacking from Ophra. V'chor v'shalayin matzah b'chol eretz Yisrael. None of the Jewish people had any swords. Ki amru plishtim pen yasvo ivim cherav echonis. Remember, the plishtim are now ruling over the Jewish people for quite a long time. And they set a rule that there will be no
blacksmiths
among the Jewish people. All the blacksmiths would be only in the land of Plishtim. So any time the Jewish people wanted to fix one of their utensils, one of their metal utensils, they had to go to Plishtim and fix it over there. Either it was an axe or the knife you used to harvest.
Sickle.
Yeah. V'yerdukol Yisrael ha-plishtim niltosh ish es machrashtoi ves esoi ves kardumim ves machreshosoi. So they went down to the land of Plishtim to sharpen their plow, their axe, and their... What was that word?
Sickle.
Sickle.
What they used to cut the wheat.
Sickle. Right.
Sickle. Right. V'leisa b'tziru pim l'machreshas. The ptsira was the mouth to the... That was like the sharp part of the plow. And the shovels that they used to dig up the ground. And the three-fork... what's it called?
It's a pitchfork.
Pitchfork, right. A pitchfork. That's all they had. They didn't have anything else because that's all the Plishtim let them have because they knew that one day the Jewish people might rebel. They wanted to make sure that they had no weapons at all. No swords, no No nothing. No spears.
Just like they want to take the guns away from people.
Right. Yeah. We're in America.
Even in America, they're always talking about taking guns away.
No, you could left the guns to take away the ammunition. What good is the guns without ammunition?
This is what the Germans did.
They was talking
during the
about
Second World
guns.
War, they made all the Jews turn in their
weapons.
They didn't have anything to fight with.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about swords and spears that they would
the
make.
The same thing. What's the difference?
Not the same thing.
Those were the weapons of those days.
With a sword and a spear, you can cause a lot more damage than with a gun without bullets.
In any case, now the Jewish people are in a serious situation. They have 600 men left facing this huge army of 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, an enormous amount of foot soldiers, and they do not even have any swords with which to fight. The only ones who had a spear and a sword were Shaul and Yohanan. The Chazal say this was Bederach Nes. There was a miracle and they got a sword and a spear, but everybody else, all they had was axes and pitchforks. That's all they had to fight. The Plishtim are now attacking the Jewish people. We're going to see next week exactly how the war went. And just a spoiler alert, Hashem made a major mess, and the Jewish people ended up winning the war, even though they were well outnumbered. Now, I just want to take a few minutes to discuss the lessons that Ralbag brings out from the whole story of appointing a king by the Jewish people. He says, first of all, we learn from here that a person should make sure his sons are doing the right thing, following the right path, even though he's extremely busy taking care of the needs of the nation. Shmuel was very busy judging the Jewish people, and because of that, his sons were doing the wrong thing. As we mentioned before, they did not handle things the way they were supposed to, and that's why the Nebuah was not given to them They did not inherit the Nevuah from Shmuel. And rather, it was given to Pinchas ben Elazar. The second thing is to show us that when someone sees that the people are trying to ask for something that's not really the best thing for them, what you should try to do is convince them not to go ahead and take it. Try to convince them to forget about this idea, what they want, because if you know it's not good for them, then you should try to convince them as best you can. The third thing that you learn from here is that even if you realize that you were not successful in convincing them, still what we should try to do is you should try to minimize the negative effect that will come about from these actions. And therefore, what Shmuel did was instructions from Hashem, was appoint a king that will be righteous and whole, a man like Shmuel, who was a very, very righteous man. Because at least if you're going to have a good king who will follow in the ways of Hashem, rather than having a bad king who will not follow in the ways of Hashem.
He wasn't a bad guy.
He was a very good guy, right.
He was and everything right, else.
Right, he was. Right, no, this is the king. He obviously messed up in a few small points, but overall he was a very good man. He was tzaddik, he was a guy, and he knew a lot. He was a great Talmud Chacham, and that was the right person to be the king. Meaning, even though the Jewish people wanted the king, and it was not the best thing for them, at least what you can do is, a partial solution is better than nothing. Right? Don't think, if I can't convince them to not have a king, I'm just going to give up and let them have whoever they want. No. Well, you can do whatever you can. And if you can convince them to have if you can get them to have a good king, then you should at least do that. Because a good king will bring the Jewish people to do the right thing, to be over to Hashem the right way. He has a whole list of things. We're just going to do one more tonight because it's late. Another thing you learn from here is that when a person loses something, he should make sure to do the best he can to retrieve it. That's what we learned from Kish. Kish, the father of Shaul, when he lost his donkeys, he did not send one of his servants, one of his avadim. Rather, he sent his son, Shaul, because he knew that one of the servants, first of all, he's not going to look for them as strong as his son would. And even if he does look for them and he does find them, he might sell them and say, yeah, listen, you know, I never found them. You know, I looked really hard, but I couldn't find them. And then he's just going to pocket the money. Therefore, Kish made sure to send Shaul rather than any one of his servants. Okay, we're going to stop here.